Thursday, September 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump reasserts a tough line on immigration. Australian officials cancel two planned concerts honoring Mao Zedong.
In the Chinese eye, he is a mass murderer, and he killed over 70 million Chinese during his reign.
And ancient Hawaiian farmers offer lessons to the modern world. It's all ahead. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump laid out his tough immigration plans if he wins the November election against Democrat Hillary Clinton in a speech late Wednesday in Arizona. The speech followed Trump's quick visit to Mexico City for talks on immigration and other issues with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto. I'm joined by VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, Jim, some observers thought Trump might be softening his approach to immigration, but apparently he hasn't.
Yeah, you know, I was watching that speech on Wednesday night, and he laid out a very long list of measures he's taking to secure the border, particular focus on criminal aliens, getting them out of the country. The key question for the Trump campaign for months has been, do you really want to deport the estimated 11 million people here illegally, but many of whom are law-abiding and so forth, going about their lives, would be very disruptive. And the only thing he kind of made a glancing blow at that by saying, once we get ourselves sorted out with security and get immigration reform in place, then we'll address the people that are still here. Well, that's kind of punting on the whole thing. So I don't know that he didn't necessarily help himself with that, and it's hard to read into much softening. His tone in that speech was very tough. It harkened back to many of the speeches last year when he first announced and made immigration the central issue in his campaign.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what is he now advocating? Because there have been reports recently that his new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, had sort of advocated a more softened approach in this area.
Yesterday, Wednesday, was a bit of a day where your head was on a swivel. He went to Mexico. You could argue he looked presidential in the meeting with the Mexican president. They had an exchange of views. He leaves Mexico City, but then the Mexican president tweets out that, oh, by the way, he did bring up Mexico paying for the wall, and I told him at the beginning of our meeting that's not going to happen. Well, Trump said it wasn't even discussed, so he kind of undermined himself there a bit. And then after setting this presidential persona on display, it was just a few hours later where he reverted back to the sort of primary campaigner Donald Trump, getting everybody riled up in a border state like Mexico. So I'm not sure if the Trump campaign and their staffers planned it that way, because it was a very confusing and contradictory kind of message to send out for one day in the campaign.
And what has been the reaction by Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton's team?
Right. I mean, their campaign put out a statement basically accusing Trump of doubling down on his tough immigration stance and dividing communities and, you know, depicting illegal immigrants as criminals. So we're going to see the Clinton campaign resurrect the kind of attacks we've seen for months now that, you know, in some recent weeks, Trump has aided and abetted by some of his controversial statements off the cuff, calling into question his temperament as a potential president. It's one of the issues in the poll, if you look at where he's weakest. About 60% of people don't think he has the right temperament. Now, Clinton has her own problems, which is credibility and trustworthiness. And they're both roughly equal now in terms of negative public approval ratings. But I think the Clinton campaign believes eventually they will win out, because Trump can be politically his own worst enemy.
Now, these polls seem to be just recently tightening between the two.
They do. There's some national polls that have shown a tightening. Trump's biggest problem, though, is still in the key dozen or so what we call battleground states, states that can go one way or the other in the election because the party control is disputed. And she continues to hold sizable leads in key states, places like Virginia, Colorado, even in North Carolina that President Obama won in only one of his two elections. As long as that trend continues, Republicans will be nervous about Trump and worried that if he does go down to defeat, he could drag down some Republican congressional candidates, especially some of these key Senate races where Democrats may be able to pick up a seat and eventually might even be able to retain control of the Senate.
And just quickly, what about the two other, you know, there's a Libertarian candidate as well as a Green Party candidate. And if it gets really tight, could that have an impact as well?
It could. The key thing there is they'd like to get in the debates, but they need 15% in the polls in order to make that debate cut. And so far, they're not quite there. If they could get in the debates, they could change the complexion of the race.
All right. Thanks very much. That's national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, also joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Well, I'm sure, Andrew, there's a lot trending today.
Absolutely. And a lot of talk about this Donald Trump visit to Mexico and the speech in Arizona. Now, as Jim pointed out, there is a lot of back and forth on this, whether it's showing that he's unwavering on immigration and trying to reassure conservatives, or if it's just a radicalization of his position, he's trying to push Hispanics away. So those are the two narratives we're seeing on social media. The story on social media that's also trending out of this is that several Hispanic surrogates of Donald Trump have said, wait a minute, maybe I don't want to support him after all. So people saying that that's a bad sign for his campaign if people who are supposed to be out there promoting him and supporting him are stepping away. And then there's the hat. Of course, Donald Trump is known for this Make America Great Again hat. And there was a new hat that debuted yesterday in Arizona worn by former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Senator Jeff Sessions that said, Make Mexico Great Again also. So this is something that, I guess, in the eyes of the Trump campaign was to say we're going to try to improve things and make, you know, tackle this issue of illegal immigration. But it was just skewered on social media. There were hats that said, what about Canada? another hat said, leave Canada out of this. And so a lot of just people kind of run with it, and it became a meme unto itself, this hat. But outside of Donald Trump trending, we have news of this SpaceX rocket explosion today in Florida. SpaceX taking to their Twitter account to call it an anomaly and confirming that it was the loss of the vehicle and the payload, apparently a $200 million payload. Images of this smoke plume rising up, this huge plume of black smoke have been shared around social media, but no video yet. And a lot of people wondering, is there going to be video of this that's released? Because it'll probably be very stunning video of this explosion. And then today is the first day of September, so that means fall is starting to begin, but it's also hashtag back to Hogwarts, because in the Harry Potter universe, this is the day that all the little witches and wizards go back to the fictional wizarding school. So a lot of people, Harry Potter fans, saying that they're wishing they were going to Hogwarts rather than their own schools, because here in the U.S. and around the world, it's also back to school time.
Right, so, all types of schools.
All types of schools, but I'm sure those little ones who are going back to real school would rather be going back to a fun place like Hogwarts.
But, no doubt.
Alas.
Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. More than 1,000 people are arrested in post-election violence in Gabon. An unmanned SpaceX rocket explodes on a Florida launch pad. Turkey denies a ceasefire and vows to continue its offensive in northern Syria. And Apple's CEO blames the European Union tax ruling on anti-U.S. sentiment. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have spotted the most distant galaxy cluster so far. The astronomers made their discovery with a number of NASA and European Space Agency space telescopes, including the Chandra X-ray and XMM Newton observatories, along with powerful ground-based telescopes such as ESO's Very Large Telescope. The galaxy cluster is called CLJ-1001 and is located some 11.1 billion light-years from Earth. Galaxy clusters are areas of the universe where perhaps hundreds of galaxies group together and are bound to each other by gravity. Astronomers say there are 11 massive galaxies located at the center of this galaxy cluster. The scientists say that another fascinating factor of its discovery is finding that it's undergoing astonishing growth, and its core is cranking out over 3,000 stars a year. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, traditional Hawaiian farming techniques offer lessons to the modern world. Two Australian concerts honoring former Chinese communist leader Mao Zedong have been cancelled. The concerts were to take place in Sydney and Melbourne next week to mark the 40th anniversary of Mao's death. But many Chinese Australians who suffered under Mao were outraged by the plan and intended to publicly protest the concerts. Australian officials canceled them, citing public safety concerns. Chen Longlin is a former Chinese diplomat who defected to Australia in 2005, and he led the concert opposition. Speaking from Sydney, he explains his disapproval.
Mao considered as one of the worst mass murder in 20th century. In the Chinese eye, he is a mass murderer. And he killed over 70 million Chinese during his reign.
How did your family personally, I believe your father, suffer during the Cultural Revolution?
Oh, yeah, still fresh. The memory, the story told by my mother. When I was 3 years old, my father was persecuted to death during the Cultural Revolution.
When this proposal got going, do you think that there is an effort within Australia, perhaps by some, I don't know, by the Chinese government or somehow to try to promote the idea of Mao's legacy? Do you think that was partly behind the idea for these concerts?
Of course, there's a Chinese hand behind that. This is not totally impossible, an idea from nowhere. This is connected to China, connected to China. I get some information from someone close to the consulate that it is a Chinese consulate in Sydney who arranged the connection between the organizer of the concert and Mao's family. So the person as a, you know, work as a liaison person.
How sizable is the Chinese community in Australia?
It depends on what sort of community you refer to. The one is active, totally controlled by the Chinese embassy and the consulates. But the one who are not very active or have a quite limited number, the Chinese migrants, is the population here is you know, compared to the past, it's quite huge now, especially after the Tiananmen massacre. About 40,000 Chinese students who were given permanent visa and joined Australian citizenship since then, and with combined with their family, should be over 100,000 people here.
You and your fellow activists in this regard must be very pleased, though, by the decision to cancel these two concerts in Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, because we are. When we heard this the message, and we were very, very angry, and feel it's very disgusting, and saw that how can that be possible, and we talked to local the Chinese community who used to be very quiet. And they were very shocked too. And they said, okay, we fled China, we left China, and we want to be away from the communism ideology. Now Mao is here. They follow us. They want to pollute this land. And there's nowhere we can go. So that
the so-called planned concert irritate actually the most majority of the Chinese population.
Chen Longlin, a Chinese-Australian who led the opposition to two concerts in Australia honoring Mao Zedong that were canceled. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOANews.com.
Visit VOANews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.
This is International Edition. Our planet at the crossroads is the focus this week as thousands of government officials, environmental activists, business leaders, and other delegates from nearly 200 countries gather in Honolulu for the World Conservation Congress. Held every 4 years, the conference, sponsored by the International Union for Conservation and Nature, helps shape the direction of global conservation and sustainable development. This is the first time it's being held in the U.S. Organizers say one of the reasons the Aloha State was chosen to host the Eco Summit is because it's been a model for incorporating indigenous culture into its conservation initiatives. A shining example of this is Limahuli Garden and Preserve on the island of Kauai. Heidi Chang takes us there.
Well, when you first come into the valley, you see all of these terraces that are remnants of the ancient agricultural complex that dates back almost 1,000 years. So the original inhabitants of these valley built these walls and left them to be able to grow taro on the land.
Kavika Winter enjoys introducing people to one of Hawaii's natural treasures through guided tours. He's been the director of Limahuli Garden and Preserve on the island of Kauai for more than a decade. Exploring the verdant tropical valley makes you feel like you're stepping back in time. Winter notes while most of Hawaii's food is now imported, once upon a time, valleys like this one nourished the whole community.
If you were to take the time to walk through the jungle over here, you'd find terrace after terrace after terrace all the way down to the ocean. So this valley was definitely feeding a lot of people in the old days.
In Hawaiian, Limahuli means turning hands. Some say it refers to the people who once turned their hands here to work the earth. Limahuli Garden and Preserve is one of four gardens in Hawaii run by the National Tropical Botanical Garden. Winter says it's also one of the few places in the state where people can learn how to manage resources based on the ancient Hawaiian ahupua'a system.
An ahupua'a is basically a land section that extends from the top of the mountains out into the ocean, and it's within the borders of an ahupua'a that Hawaiian communities were developed and managed.
Hawaii is the endangered species capital of the U.S. Winter says Limahuli plays a leading role in saving native species with its approach to biocultural conservation.
There's upwards of 40 species that are on the verge of extinction that exist in our valley, and we're working to do ecological restoration to prevent extinction of this precious biodiversity that exists in this valley. Some of the species are only existing in this valley, and some of them have very limited range, some of them down to a few individuals in the wild.
The Hawaii botanist says he hopes that by coming to Limahuli, visitors will learn some valuable lessons from the past, that ancient Hawaiians understood whatever you do on the land affects the life and ecosystem of the ocean. They also recognized fresh water is a secret to everything. Today, Limahuli Stream remains one of the last pristine waterways left in the islands. Kavika Winter believes Limahuli Garden and Preserve can show the world how to care for the planet.
You know, a lot of us in Hawaii and other places around the world are trying to move more towards a sustainable lifestyle. It's a really big buzzword right now, sustainability. But from our perspective, instead of reinventing the wheel, all we need to do is look back to a system that worked in Hawaii for at least a millennium and quite possibly more. And so we look back to the Ahupua system of resource management, and we use that, its guiding principles, its guiding philosophy, and our hope is that we can be a model of sustainability, and we can ensure that the Ahupua system can offer viable solutions to our contemporary issues of regarding sustainability in Hawaii and the globe.
For VOA News, I'm Heidi Chang at Limahuli Garden and Preserve.
And that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A report by the United Nations and the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW, has confirmed that the Assad regime repeatedly used chemical weapons in Syria in 2014 and 2015. ISIL was also found to have used mustard gas in an attack in 2015. The year-long UN-backed investigation looked into 9 cases of use or likely use of chemical weapons and was able so far to determine responsibility for 3 of them. It is now impossible to deny that the Syrian regime has repeatedly used industrial chlorine as a weapon against its own people, said U.S. National Security Council spokesman Ned Price in a statement. We condemn these actions in the strongest possible terms. In 2013, in a deal brokered by Russia and the United States, President Bashar Assad agreed to hand over his entire stockpile of chemical weapons and to join the Chemical Weapons Convention. The continued use in Syria of toxic chemicals as weapons led to the adoption of UN Security Council Resolution 2209, citing such use as a violation of Resolution 2118 and the Chemical Weapons Convention. White House spokesman Josh Earnest called Assad's weaponization of chlorine an act of indiscriminate violence against his own people.
That's consistent with the tactics that we've seen previously, including the targeting of medical facilities and the dropping of barrel bombs out of helicopters, even in places where the Assad regime knows that civilians are located.
In a statement, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power said that the OPCW UN report has now confirmed a pattern of use of chemical weapons by the Syrian regime that mirrors numerous other confirmed cases of chemical weapons use across Syria. This horrific and continuous use of chemical weapons by Syria represents the greatest challenge to the legitimacy of the Chemical Weapons Convention since it entered into force, and an affront to a century's worth of efforts to create and enforce an international norm against the use of chemical weapons. Ambassador Power said it is essential that the members of the Security Council come together to ensure consequences for those who have used chemical weapons in Syria. It is essential that all state and non-state actors immediately cease any chemical weapons use. We strongly urge all states to support strong and swift action by the Security Council.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.